You're listening to Anita Marks on 98.7 ESPN.
We welcome you in with you until 1 o'clock, or noon, I should say, sorry. With you from 9 to noon. Don't get ahead of myself, Anita. I do have a doggy play date at 1 o'clock, the dog park. Hopefully the weather will be even warmer outside. But we've got a great show lined up for you. Obviously, a lot of talk in regard to the NCAA tournament. Not sure, but I was up late last night, hoping you were, because I'm not even going to say arguably. Gonzaga and UCLA, 93-90 in overtime. Suggs hitting that three-point shot to win it. Hands down, best game of the tournament. And, you know, very interesting because I'm watching Baylor and Houston. How about you? But, like, second half, I'm like, no way. There was a 14. As we know, basketball is a game of runs, right? There was a 14-3 run with Baylor. And then just for a minute, you thought, oh, maybe Houston. Oh, nope, another 16-3 run. It's a game of runs, but usually those runs have to go back and forth. It's not one team dominating, and that's what Baylor did. So Baylor took care of Houston 78-59. Jared Butler was just unbelievable. One would say that Baylor's backcourt, I mean, all five guards are just ridiculous. Maybe arguably one of the best backcourts in the history of college basketball. Five players in double digits. Just ridiculous. But you know, again, I'm watching that. I'm home, excited. You know, thank God I put my prop bets in. But and I did have Baylor. I had Baylor minus six. I teased Baylor. I had Baylor minus two at the half. So I was good. I won in that. But at the same time, you want an entertaining game. You want a good game. And I feel I don't know if it's because, you know, how COVID affected the season. I don't know if maybe they got the seeding wrong because of the way that the season, and, you know, we're sitting here, you know, coming in, the biggest concern in regard to the Cougars and Houston was who have they played this season, you know, and their road to get to the Final Four was one of the easiest. Cleveland State, 87-56, Rutgers, 63-60, Syracuse, 62-46, close call with Oregon State, who was a 12 seed, 67-61. So, you know, was the seeding right in regard to the parity and the competitive value and entertainment value that we got in this tournament this year? I don't think so. This isn't one of those tournaments where, you know, I just feel like, you know, I was on the edge of my seat every round. Just wasn't. And I was kind of blasé last night. Didn't even watch the second half. What did I do? Oh, you know what I did watch? I'll tell you what I watched. I watched the Michael Jordan documentary on his father's death, and it's called Moment of Truth. And so I want to say it's like a 6 or 7 part series. It's going on right now. In depth look in regard to Michael Jordan's father, the unfortunate death, him being shot, and the two young men. I'm only two episodes in or serving jail time, but there's some speculation whether or not they got the right guys. So anyway, it's a doc. I put that on last night. Didn't even watch the second half. Blah, blah, blah. Then all of a sudden, Gonzaga and UCLA. Oh boy, was this a good one. Was this, again, best game of the tournament. Best game of the tournament. And who knew? I want to open up the phone lines. 800-919-3776. Listen, UCLA, in my opinion, most difficult region to come out of, right? Michigan, FSU, USC. I'm sorry, it was Alabama. So Michigan, FSU, Alabama. I think Texas was in that region as well. To me, that was the most competitive region to come out of. And so really impressive, really good defense. I submitted at least 20 brackets in at least four different pools. Not one of them did I have UCLA advancing to the Final Four. Not one. Did you? I'm curious. 800-919-3776. But I've got an even better show question. And we've got Michael and Ty who are producing the show. And gentlemen, please know how much I appreciate. We started an hour early because of On the Tee. Please know how much I appreciate you guys coming in early today. And that is, so Suggs, who's been one of the stars of the tournament for Gonzaga, right? Gonzaga's got a ton of stars. Timmy, right, with the mustache, all that. But, you know, Suggs has just been, and for a freshman, he's been otherworldly. So UCLA in Gonzaga, by the way, 27 straight victories by double digits. And keep in mind, the line was, what, minus 14, minus 16, I think, at tip-off. And I think a lot of money, I think, and I don't have the stats in front of me, but I would imagine that Vegas was a big winner last night, or maybe they broke even because of the Baylor beatdown. But nonetheless, I'm sure a lot of money was on Gonzaga because they've just been so dominant. They're ridiculous. And UCLA just, they just grinded. They just stayed in it. They were grinding. And you're watching it and like, you're like, could this happen? Could UCLA be the team that upsets Gonzaga? Are you kidding me? Goes into overtime, Suggs nails that three-pointer in overtime to win it. Gonzaga now 31-0. By the way, the first time a team has advanced to the championship since Larry Bird in Indiana State in 1979. I'm not going to sit here and tell you I watched that. I didn't. I wasn't into college basketball at that time. But of course, as we know the story and lost to Magic Johnson in Michigan State. But man, this Gonzaga team is just unbelievable. There were 15 ties and 19 lead changes. 15 ties and 19 lead changes. So, you know, again, you really need to commend UCLA. Really, unbelievable. But here's my show question. And Michael and Ty, I'd love for you to get in on this. And that is, I grew up an athlete, right? And so, and I would imagine that a large portion of our listening audience are athletes. And when you're an athlete and you're young, depending on, you know, maybe there's a variety of sports you play, like you're always daydreaming. You always got that dream, right? Of like the ending of a game and where, you know, you're it. You're it. I use this phrase. Sometimes it gets me in trouble, but well, actually I'm going to steal a phrase. I'm going to steal a phrase called pressure is a privilege. This is my phrase. My phrase is the sign of a true athlete is one who the sign of a true athlete is one that delivers that when the pressure is on, because the pressure is so immense. The pressure is so great that when you nail that 3-point shot to win it in overtime, or when you hit that walk-off home run because you were down by three, last inning, bases loaded, full count, World Series, and you hit that walk-off. It's those scenarios where the pressure is on, and then you deliver, and you rise to the occasion. There, in my opinion, I don't do drugs. I've never done drugs, so I don't. When I say there couldn't be a better high, I'm not speaking from experience. I'm speaking from imagination. My imagination is, I don't believe, because I've been in that situation. I've thrown that last minute, 3 seconds left on the clock, need to throw a touchdown in order to win, to move, advance in the playoffs, make it to our women's professional football Super Bowl. I was in that situation in Dallas against the Dallas Diamonds. I've been in that situation as a kid playing Little League, softball, stuff like that. If you've been in that pressure situation where it all comes down on you, the pressure is one thing. To be successful and to rise to the occasion and to deliver, there can't be a higher high. There can't be I don't think there's anything in the world that can produce or provide that feeling and that sense of accomplishment to go from, again, pressure is a privilege, having the pressure of knowing that your entire team, the entire organization is on your back, the entire school, the entire program is on your back and you need to deliver. And to go from that to being successful, to achieving, to overachieving, to being the reason why your ball club wins, your program wins, your organization wins. It's stuff that kids dream of. It's stuff that we dream of, right? So I want to open up the phone lines, 800-919-3776. What is for you, is it that 3-point shot at the buzzer? Is it the walk-off home run in the ninth inning? Is it that last-minute touchdown with 3-5 seconds left in the game? Is it draining that 10 to 15 foot putt to win a major? You know, what does it for you? And Michael and Ty, I'd like to hear your thoughts as well. And what would do it for you? I need to marinate in it myself for a second. But you know, this young man, I bet you he didn't sleep at all last night, and he's probably still on cloud nine right now.
You're listening to Anita Marks on 98.7 ESPN.
Suggs, talking about his greatest sports moment, man. Again, it's stuff that we only dream of as kids. And how blessed is this young man that he got to actually live it. He got to actually live it. By the way, the Michael K. Show's Drop Madness concludes on Monday. Have your dials tuned to 98.7 ESPN at 2 o'clock. New start time for the fellas. And be ready to cast votes for the championship match at TMKS ESPN on Twitter. Reminder, we've got Adam Zagoria, who's going to be joining us in about 10 minutes. We'll continue with your calls, 800-919-3776. Cynthia Freeland in our second hour at 10 o'clock. And we'll dive into some NFL talk. Especially what's going on with the Jets and what they're going to do with that number 2 pick. And of course, Moke Hamilton back in action with us at 11 o'clock. We'll talk some NBA. So without further ado, again, 800-919-3776. You want to chime in on the conversation. Let's do this, guys. Let's go to our calls because Michael and Ty are producing the show. I want to get your best sports moment, what you envision. Let's go to Russell in Jersey. Russell, welcome in.
Welcome. How you doing, Anita? Such an honor. Unbelievable that I'm talking to you. You're awesome. And I had to do some breathing exercises just to get this out.
Oh, stop. It's you,
my story is that I played on the Golf Channel Amateur Tour. TPC Sawgrass got down to a final playoff hole, stood above this putt for par, stood there and looked at it and measured it out, and I said, outside right, stood over it and got ready to stroke it. All of a sudden, changed my mind, went inside, and it lipped out on the outside on the left side with a perfect stroke, like 14 feet for par. Unbelievably, the excitement to miss it, the saddest thing in the world. And then I put the next one in the water. And just on the other side of the excitement, there was other ones that I did good. But that one there was just unbelievable. Just to be there and to play on that course as well was just, it just puts goosebumps through you.
I'm sure, Russell. Thank you for the kind words and thank you for sharing. Gentlemen, who wants to go first? Ty, Michael?
So for me, I think it has to be a walk-off.
Walk-off home run.
I think there's no better feeling than standing there, and I would pimp the home run, obviously. pitcher can't get mad. Don't let me hit a home run, and just standing there and having everybody go wild. I think because my favorite moment as a sports fan was I am from DC, so the Nats winning the World Series and just watching all the big moments in that, and just having the crowd go crazy. I think there's probably no better feeling than just standing there in the batter's box, knowing that, hey, I potentially just helped my team win a World Series.
Absolutely. I'm sure. Ty?
My favorite sports moment is Kobe and the Lakers in 2010 beating the Boston Celtics in the NBA Finals in Game 7 at the Staples Center. It's my favorite sport, obviously, so I'm going to have to go with a walk-off game-winning shot to corral an NBA title. At home, the crowd going nuts. That to me has to be, if I were an athlete, if I can script my favorite moment, or what can be determined as the best moment of my career, it would have to be something like that.
I like it. I like it. I'm going to share with you a personal moment.
Maybe we go triple overtime in that game.
I'm going to share with you. So as you know, I played women's professional football, but in the off season, we would play flag football, and we play flag football 4-on-4. It was called Let It Fly. I'm sure that there's quite a few people out there listening that know what I'm talking about. And then we play 7-on-7, and then we'd also play 9-on-9 contact. What's 9-on-9? It means you've got 3 offensive linemen. We're not in pads. The only type of protection you have is a mouthpiece. That's it. So it's still flag football, but you've got a center and you've got 2 guards or 2 tackles. And so you're able to block, and you don't tackle. You still pull the flag, but yet there's contact in the game. Like your wide receivers can block downfield for a running back and what have you. So anyway, long story short, our team represented the United States in the Flag Football World Cup Championships. And they were always somewhere. One year it was in the Dominican Republic. Another year it was in the Bahamas. Like, it was always somewhere. You always traveled somewhere. Like, and all the countries participated. And Mexico, believe it or not, Mexico dominated. Mexico had a women's flag football team that went to school half of the day. And so their flag football team that competed in the World Cup Championships and competed all over the country was like a professional team to them. So they would only go to school, and they would groom these young girls, and they would only go to school half the day, and the other half of the day they would practice. And they played a very unique style of flag football. They would mix it. It would be kind of a flag football style soccer where they would lateral back to advance. And so they typically played with these 3 quarterbacks in the back. So it was really challenging to try to, A, their speed, their athleticism, their precision, their timing. But on top of that, to engineer a defense that was going to stop them, let alone have the horses in our stable in order to do so. And so each and every year we would compete and we would represent the United States in the World Cup, and we would always lose to them. We would either lose to them in the playoffs or we'd lose to them in the championship. And this was like 7 years running. We could just never get through Mexico. So we're down in the Bahamas and we're in the championship game, and it's like 3 seconds left in the game, and we just scored. Now, if we go for 1 from the so we could either kick a field goal from the 25-yard line, or we could try to, you know, have a play from the 3-yard line, a regular, you know, play from scrimmage from the 3-yard line for 1, and we'd tie it up and the game would go into overtime. So I looked at our coach John. I'll never forget this. I looked at Coach John. I said, "We'll never be here again. Let's go for 2. Let's come out. Let's go for 2. They won't know what hit them. They're probably going to have to call timeout. And it's all or nothing. Let's do this." And he looked at me. He said, "It's you. Call the play." So got in the huddle. And so we called an option right. Now I was more of a, you know, the offense that we ran was more of a spread. I'd have 5 wide receivers out. You know, I'd like to throw the ball all over the yard. That was me. I didn't run much. So we called an option play, uncharacteristic of how I play. So we called an option right. So here we are. We're going for 2. It's all or nothing. And I fake the option. Everybody bites. Everybody on defense bites. And I take it in standing up, flag intact, no, not even touched. And we win for the first time. We beat Mexico. Mexico was like the Patriots, right? In the 90s. That's who Mexico was. And we beat them by going for 2 and being aggressive. And I don't do drugs. I've never done drugs. I don't know what that feeling is, but I can't imagine anything in life making me feel the way that I did that moment, that day, that night, and for days after. Can't imagine it.
You're listening to Anita Marks on 98.7 ESPN.
I think the world of Daniel Jones. I really do. Jury's still out for me in regard to, is he the quarterback of the future? Is where the Giants drafted him? Was that the best decision? You know, you drop a quarterback in the top 10, you want your quarterback to be a top 10 quarterback in the NFL. You know, right now, to me, for a number of reasons, Daniel Jones is kind of hovering towards the bottom, somewhere, you know, top 20, top 25. You know, and that, and to me, that's a quarterback that you draft in the second round. Quarterbacks you draft in the first round, you know, you want them to be top 5, top 10 in the NFL. You know, that's the value in that pick, especially in, at that position. 800-919-3776. Let's play one more clip from John Mara talking to the media earlier this week.
Losing and of having the postseason press conference trying to explain what went wrong and why I think we're making progress. It's time for us to start winning some more. And that's one of the reasons we spent the money that we did. I do think we're making progress here. We've added more players. It's a, definitely a better locker room than we've had in a while. And I think Joe has done a terrific job instilling a certain culture here. And the players believe in him, and the fans seem to believe in him, too. So I think we're moving in the right direction. But but obviously it's been brutal the last few years, and we're looking forward to turning it around and not having to make excuses for why we haven't done it.
There's no excuses this year, again, after the money that they spent. 800-919-3776. Let's go to Paul in St. James. Paul, you're up.
Hey, Anita. I haven't spoken to you since last year, this time at the draft. And I think we kind of look at the same thing. I think if the Jets, I'm a Jet fan, obviously, if the Jets can come out of their first four picks with Micah Parsons and two guys that were pulled out of the draft last year and finished their senior year, Alex Thomas and Creed Humphrey, I think they will improve their team tremendously. And it's not, I don't think it's drafting hungry. I think it's drafting patient. Joe Douglas, in essence, has the first pick in the draft. If Trevor Lawrence goes the way everybody thinks, he's got the first pick.
But Paul, here's the thing.
He can trade that for a boatload.
Yeah, absolutely. Listen. If I'm Joe, and again, I don't get paid Joe Douglas money. If I'm Joe Douglas, I'm trading out at two. I'm sticking with Sam Darnold. I'm not sold on Zach Wilson. I'm just not.
Oh, definitely.
I'm just not. I love Mac Jones, you know, but still, I'd stick with Sam Darnold for one more year. I would trade down. I love Parsons. You know, I love Pitts, to be honest with you. That's who I love. I love Pitts. But I'd trade down, if somebody could, man, could you imagine if he trades down and gets Pitts and Parsons?
That would be great. I mean, that would be unbelievable.
Oh my gosh.
You need to do that.
I'd die.
In the top 10, though.
Oh, that, I mean, that'd be beautiful. That would be beautiful. To me,
right,
Parsons.
But if he doesn't address the offensive line, whoever has the ball is going to be running for their life.
Yeah, but there's not a lot of great offensive linemen coming out this year. There's just not.
No, but
there's Sewell.
Look at Creed Humphrey.
And Slater
center,
is a guard.
And Alex Thomas. They're good.
Yeah, I mean, in later rounds, there's just not a lot of exciting offensive linemen
I'm
in the first.
I'm talking about in the top 60 or 70, not in the first 10. If he came out of the top 10 with Pitts and Parsons, I'd be like, oh my goodness.
Are you kidding? Thanks for the call, Paul. Pitts, to me, second best player in this draft, best skill position player in this draft. Parsons, arguably best defensive player in this draft, next to Surtain. That's what I would do. Let's go to Matt in Queens. Matt, you're up.
Hey, Nita, how you doing? Happy Easter.
Happy Easter, you too. Good morning.
Thank you. I mean, you look at all the quarterbacks besides Trevor Lawrence, there's no one that you can fall in love with. There's quarterbacks you can look at and say, yeah, they got the tools, they look good, you know, they've done some things, but you can't be in love with them. But if Joe Douglas sees enough to work with in Wilson or whoever else he may be looking at, take the quarterback and keep Sam Darnold. Because you can't – a number of reasons you keep Sam Darnold. Number one, he might be really good. Number two, you let the quarterbacks compete. Nothing wrong with that. Number three, you can't get anything for Darnold anyway, according to what everybody's saying. So why get rid of a quarterback that's younger than Joe Burrow that a lot of people think can still be good? Of course, we don't know that, but they think it.
Here's the thing, and I apologize. I'm eating breakfast while I'm hosting the show. Nothing like grilled chicken dipped in honey mustard sauce. If the Jets are going to draft Zach Wilson, there's two trains of thought here, right? Like, if you draft Zach Wilson, if you draft him at two, are you automatically assuming that he's going to start, even though he's not ready? Understand that, Jets fans. If the Jets draft Zach Wilson, it this coming year will be a growing year, a maturing, a developing year for him. He's not ready for the NFL. So if they draft, so do they, and we had Cynthia Freeland on not too long ago, she said they draft Zach Wilson, they're going to trade Sam Darnold. Why? Because you don't want that, you want Zach Wilson learning, but Sam will probably know, like, I'm out of here after this year. It's just uncomfortable situation that creates itself in the that develops within that quarterback room. So again, if I'm Joe Douglas, I'm trading out of two. I'm stockpiling. I'm getting a ton of picks, and I'm going to try to get out of this draft in the first round, drafting two of the best players on the board, regardless of position. I'm not going to draft hungry. I'm drafting two best players on the board. Let's go to Ira in Staten Island. Ira, you're up.
Hey, good morning, Anita. How are you? How's everything?
Good morning.
I totally respect your opinion and all the experts that are saying to trade down and keep the pick. It's just, you know what? My eyes don't lie. I can't get past the point, I think many other professionals either. When you have Darnold between USC and the Jets 5 seasons, and he has 80-plus turnovers, that's never going to change. And today's, you can't win in the NFL when you turn the ball over.
But Ira, do you understand that you're banking?
Listen,
you're banking.
He has talent.
Ira, wait a minute. I understand what you're saying about Darnold, but you understand that you're banking on a quarterback from BYU who is smaller than most, so therefore has to be an outlier in regard to his success and has gone up against not great talent. You understand that, right? This is what you're saying. You're saying that you want your organization to draft a BYU quarterback at two who's smaller than most. Probability is that he will not have success in the NFL. If he does, he will be an outlier. And you're basing his statistics on subpar talent. I'm just confirming that with you. That's what you're saying.
What I'm doing, I'm projecting him at the next level, and I think he has the makings of a possible star quarterback. There's everything I like about this kid. Now, this is my opinion, okay? Listen, Josh Allen, look at the talent he played against. I mean, it's the same scenario that Zach Wilson's in. If you have the right team and Zach Wilson lives up to the potential that myself or certain
people think. But Josh Allen, but Ira, listen to what you just, but Ira, and I apologize, I've got to let you go, I'm up against a break, but like Josh Allen is a combination of Ben Roethlisberger and Cam Newton. Dude is like a freaking tight end playing quarterback. You can't compare the two. You can't compare Josh Allen to Zach Wilson. You can't do it.
You're listening to Anita Marks on 98.7 ESPN. This is Click, 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 or Don't. Click, Click, Boom. Very simply, here's the headline. Are you interested in clicking or not?
My dogs are barking in the background because this is what happens when you live with a pack. We all have breakfast together, so I was giving them a few pieces of my chicken, and now they're in the studio and they're barking. Sugi, mama's working. Boo boo. It is time for Click or Don't Click. Ty and Michael are producing the show. Ty is going to lead the way, kind of fun way that we take a look around and find out what's trending based on the headlines. So, Ty, what you got?
Embrace the competition.
Competition? You know I'm clicking that.
Okay, so you just did a lot on the Jets just now. So this comes to us courtesy of Rizzimini. According to his close friend and former teammate, Josh McCown, Sam Darnold would embrace a competition from the rookie if the Jets do draft Zach Wilson. And here's the
quote. I'm sure he would.
Here's the quote from the article.
Okay.
Sam would embrace it and be helpful, but he'd also go out there, work hard, and try to make the most of the opportunity to play this year and put it back on them and make them have to make a tough decision at the end of the year. I think if that happens, really and truly, everybody wins. So Josh McCown thinks that his buddy Sam Darnold would embrace a little quarterback competition.
I hope people realize, like, if that was to happen, Sam Darnold would beat Zach Wilson out. I hope people realize that.
It doesn't mean
that 10 years from now, Sam Darnold's a better quarterback than Zach Wilson. That's not what I mean. We don't know. I'm still not sold on Zach Wilson. I'm still not sold on Sam Darnold. But if the Jets keep Sam Darnold and they have a quarterback competition, Sam will blow him out of the water.
Just think about this. Like, if Sam Darnold were good and the Jets were definitively going to bring him back, you look at what the Niners were able to trade to the Dolphins to move up to 3. The Jets, in theory, could have gotten what, Anita? If the Dolphins got 2 first-rounders, the Jets could have gotten, what, 3? Or maybe 2 first and 2 seconds? And now you have your quarterback, Darnold, in place? And space?
But here's the thing,
that's
Ty,
so
and you're a Jets fan, right? You know, here we are talking about, you know, Daniel Jones. Daniel Jones turns the ball over just as much as Sam Darnold does.
Of course.
But what did the Giants do? And what do we just played 3 clips from the owner, John Mara. We're doing everything we can to put Daniel Jones in a better position to win football games. Offensive line for Sam Darnold had sucked. I'm not going to candy coat anything. Wide receivers suck. Tight ends, although there was a period of time I loved Herndon, and I don't know what happened to him.
Yeah,
I don't know what happened to the dude.
He fell off a cliff.
Okay, I don't know. Oh, something happened. Running back. Oh, how that Le'Veon Bell situation work out for you? What has Sam had?
So we're
sitting here and we're assuming Sam sucks. We don't know. So now you're going to go from an unproven commodity to another unproven commodity. And as I said, I think Ira, I hope Ira's not upset with me. Ira, I love you, man. Don't be upset with me, but just understand, you're talking about a BYU quarterback, who's undersized, who's played against subpar competition, not a lot of great competition in college football. So therefore, for him to have success at his size, he will be an outlier. Drew Brees is an outlier. Russell Wilson is an outlier. You don't find that often. So I'm just saying, you're going from one unproven commodity to another. I don't think that's worth a number 2 pick. I think you trade down.
Yeah, but at least he had a great pro day, because that's all.
Yeah,
important.
But you're in shorts.
No,
you're not even.
I'm being sarcastic.
Yeah, you're not even in pads.
I can't read too much into pro days and.
What do you, as a Jets fans, what do you want to see them do, Ty?
I have no idea. This conversation just gives me. Massive anxiety.
I don't have a clue what they...
I feel differently every single day. Mm-hmm. At one point, I was like, bring back Sam Darnold, but then I heard Mark Sanchez on Get Up, and I can never unhear this. He made an excellent point. It is a situation that is impossible to be in if you're Darnold. You go to MetLife Stadium where fans are going to be back in the stands. You're first 3 and out. Everyone's booing you. There is no upside to bringing him back. He shouldn't want to come back. It's an impossible situation to be in.
So the organization, should do everything in their power financially and in the draft to make sure he doesn't go 3 and out.
Yeah, but I mean the larger point is that the leash is going to be so short, he's going to succumb to the pressure. It's already a pressure situation playing in New York, and now all of a sudden you're 3 years into this thing. And you haven't been good at all. A large population, a large section of the fan base wants you gone anyway. It's just not a good situation to be in if you're Darnold. Maybe you go somewhere else and you revitalize your career. But I would like to see the Jets move on.
Let's end on this, Jets fans. don't be surprised. Don't be surprised that in 3 years from now, and we had Cynthia Freeland on just a second ago, I asked her, where does she think the landing places are? Carolina, Denver, and in Las Vegas. Don't be surprised in the next 3 years, Sam Darnold is thriving somewhere else, and the Jets are looking for, or they're in the same situation where they don't know, is Zach Wilson the guy? Is Zach Wilson not the guy? Is this the year that he needs to turn the corner? What's going to happen? Don't be surprised. I'm not saying that that's what's going to happen. I'm just saying, don't be surprised if that's what happens. There's a possibility.
I don't know, Anita. I don't know.
I'm sorry. I feel like I ruined your Easter Sunday.
Well, no, of course not. But it's just
okay. All right. I mean, you sound doom and gloom. Listen, I very well could be wrong. I am wrong at times. I mean, Zach Wilson could come in and blow it up and be an even better quarterback than Trevor Lawrence. We don't know. I'm not buying it.
It's just so odd. Like, us as Jet fans, we get so excited every year because we've got high draft capital. This year, you got the number 2 overall pick. And we all know it. The draft starts there. Lawrence is going to the Jags. So the draft starts. Essentially, the Jets have the number 1 overall pick, despite not being able to have access to the best player in the draft. So you got that going for you. You've got a ton of cap space, and we get excited about this stuff every year. But what it really means is that you're a bad organization. Bad organizations draft high and have a lot of cap space. That doesn't happen for good organizations.
Again, if just to put a big fat bow on this, if I'm Joe Douglas and I'm drafting a quarterback at 2, it's Mac Jones. That's all I'm saying. It's Mac Jones. So, all right, what else you got?
All right, the Knicks get back in the win column last night.
In a big way. Talk about a butt whipping.
125-81, the final score over the Pistons in Detroit. Randle, he rebounded from a horrendous showing against the Mavs. Put up a cool 29-8-3 last night. Reggie Bullock hit 6 threes. It's a big win for the Knicks. They came in on a 3-game losing streak after last night's game. You've got the Nets, Celtics, and Grizzlies coming up. So three tough games in a row. So big, big opportunity for them to keep it rolling. They've got the Nets tomorrow night. Looks like Kevin Durant could return as early as tomorrow. He's expected to come back at some point this week, but he could be back tomorrow. So you've got Kyrie, Harden. He's out today against the Bulls. We don't know his status for tomorrow. He's out today against the Bulls. We don't know his status for tomorrow against the Knicks, but that was a big win for them last night.
It was a big one, and you know, now they've got today off. As we know, the Nets, they're taking on the Bulls. For the first time, by the way, the first time they're going to be facing the Bulls this season. But really exciting stuff that possibly the next game, Monday in Brooklyn against the Nets will have both Harden and KD back along with Kyrie. How fun will that game be on Monday night? Really, hopefully, fingers crossed, KD gets back and Harden's back. Of course, we know he's dealing with a hamstring issue. So really excited about that game on Monday. Boy.
The Nets have won 4 straight games. They are atop the Eastern Conference, tied with the Sixers. And that's just remarkable considering all the injuries. Harden was the guy who kept things together. He's been at an MVP conversation because with Kyrie in and out of the lineup, Durant's been sidelined for about 7 weeks. He was the guy that, you know, kept everything together. But now he's hurt, so Kyrie's now manning the ship. A lot of injuries for the Nets, and the fact that they're still where they are, better than everyone in the Eastern Conference, is just tremendous. What a job by Steve Nash and company.
You're listening to Anita Marks on 98.7 ESPN.